Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is going on, Packer fans? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. And you know, the one and only Justice Mosqueda. You can find him on acmepackingcompany.com, on Twitter at J-U-M-O-S-Q. Justice, this is going to be a fun one to break down. I'm excited to talk about it with you. But first of all, how the heck are you doing?
I'm doing great. The one unfortunate thing is my Ducks are going to play Ohio State this weekend. I don't know how that's
probably not going to go great.
Yeah, I don't think so. I'm not making it down to Eugene either because the tickets are crazy. You guys aren't joking about the Ohio State fans traveling and all that stuff.
Don't ask me how I know this or why I care, but your former Duck TJ Bass got in the Cowboy game last night. He had a rough go of it.
Really?
Yeah.
I was watching that game, but I wasn't really paying too close of attention until that like fumble last second where
that Elandon Roberts play was unbelievable.
7 yards deep into the end zone, runs just full speed across the formation at the snap and puts his helmet on the ball. And I'm like, I've never been that locked into anything in my life. That guy wanted that play more than I've wanted anything. So
yeah,
hats off.
It was so impressive. And it reminded me of the Matrix where they like collide in midair and then like spin around and then like the clips are empty or whatever. But like, I was trying to find a GIF of it like easily and I couldn't do it. So I gave up very quickly, but it was so cool. The collision in midair and then the ball's out. And then like the whole game is on the line, just that ball sitting there. And then Dak's got to make the business decision of, does he go full Cam Newton or does he dive on it? He dove on it, which is good.
You could see like the exclamation point, like populate on top of his head where he's like, that's the ball. That's the game. Yeah.
Yeah. It was amazing, but a really fun game. Not the most maybe aesthetically pleasing game through the majority of it, but it was a great ending. So what more could you want? The Steelers are just like, that's their brand of football. It is going to be ugly no matter what. It doesn't matter. Love the two Wisconsin edge rushers, TJ Watt, of course, and Herbig on the other side, just causing complete chaos. That was a ton of fun, but they got Benton on the inside too. It's just Wisconsin fest on that front.
Yeah, but for sure.
I digress. It is always fun talking whatever football, but let's talk some Packers football. As always, my friend, the floor is yours. Where would we like to go to first with Packers Rams?
Let's talk about the pass rush, because I feel like that's the thing that most people are worried about at this point. I'm not going to take a victory lap because I wouldn't have guessed Gary would be, you know, this non-productive at this point. I had more worries about Preston and Slayton, and we could talk about like Slayton snap counts after this. But this was supposed to be the bounce back game against an offensive line with five guys on IR, and it just wasn't. And everything wasn't quick. I mean, Stafford was, you know, Stafford's a full field progression guy. They've really leaned into that. Like, this isn't the same offense that Jared Goff was running with the Rams at all. And they were kind of able to do what they wanted outside of, you know, a couple pass breakups and, you know, the interception and stuff. Obviously, like, he looked comfortable in the pocket, which is really unfortunate for the Packers because, you know, you've got Kyler next week. We're going to hear the excuse about the must rush and all that stuff again, which, again, I don't think that they're doing that on every single play.
No.
Based off of, just the snaps and stuff. The chip stuff, I mean, there is truth to that. Like they are getting chipped on the edges and stuff like that. But when you look at the Packers rush rate versus the other teams that those teams have played, the Packers are like dead last, and it's gotta be better than that. It just has to be better. Like that's the thing. It's like, I know all the, I don't even want to call it like excuses, but like the context or whatever, however you want to put it about, you know, you're playing an early slate against mobile quarterbacks. They're getting a lot of chip help, all this stuff. Minnesota had really good tackle combo. They screened you pretty well. Like, I get that. It has to be better than that for this defense to work. And that's
I'm laughing because I talked to Nagler today, and I literally, what you just said to me was literally verbatim exactly what I said to him, of just basically being like, we can bake in like excuses every single week. Like, yeah, that, you know what? The first week you played Lane Johnson in Mailata, you had a mobile quarterback. I get it. Like, second week you had again another mobile quarterback. And I actually like Indy's tackles a little bit, maybe better than most. Braden Smith is solid, but like, mm-hmm. you know, and then again, Darisaw and O'Neal, pretty darn good offensive tackles in week four. They obviously had some success rushing the passer, at least late in the game against Tennessee in week three. This week, there's really not. But again, the chips and the stuff like that, I thought Minnesota did a great job of chipping and keeping extra guys in and really making it difficult. But at the end of it, like at some point, yeah, I get all of that is true. There's truth to all of it, but you still got to get to the quarterback. And especially when you get your one-on-one opportunities, which each of these guys throughout the course of the game are getting some one-on-one opportunities, you just got to find a way to win it. And they have not done so with any level of success so far this season, really at all.
Yeah. Here, I'll look it up at APC. I just wrote a post about why I'm officially concerned about the pass rush. Cause I've been kind of pumping the brakes on it, even though I guess I'm not pumping the brakes. How should I put it? I was very interested in how this game played out.
Agreed.
Because of what they had done previously. I wasn't willing to say that it was going to be like this the whole year, right? But I was concerned kind of coming into the season, probably a little bit more than other Packers fans, just because I kind of know how this defense works. And this is why teams got out of it. Right. Like everyone tried to do the Legion of Boom thing. Everyone drafted these long corners and then they realized, oh, you have to have four pass rushers. And it's why it never worked in Atlanta. Right. It's why Gus Bradley's failed in a lot of places because he runs that similar style system. Right. For people in the Midwest, a great example is probably Ohio State. Right. Ohio State, up until they got that kid, the defensive coordinator out of Oklahoma State, spacing on his name right now. They were a middle of the field coverage team, really. They played cover one and cover three. And that worked great when you had Joey Bosa, and that worked great when you had Nick Bosa, and that worked great when you had Chase Young. And as soon as you didn't have one of those like top five picks on the, you know, on the defensive line, things started to kind of unravel for them. And you know, you're playing Bam and you're like, why does that linebacker who runs a 4.8 taking that slot receiver vertical? And trips, you're like, ah, that doesn't make that much sense. So this is one stat, right? Next Gen Stats has Rashawn Gary's get off time at 0.95 seconds. That's about, you know, a tenth of a second slower than he's averaged the rest of his career at this point. That is not a scheme dependent stat, right?
Right?
Which is why I think that's interesting to look at. He's getting off the ball slower. I've had people go in my mentions and ask if that's a 2-point stance versus 3-point stance thing. I don't think so. Like, you don't start the combine running into 3-point because you're fast, or out of a 2-point because you're faster out of a 3-point, right?
Right.
The reason that you want to get those guys down low to the ground is because you're driving off the ball and you get that forward momentum going. So I wouldn't think that that's part of that problem. Gary's about league average right now. He's got about an 11% pressure rate. The league average is around 13 based off of the 61 edge rushers who have at least 75 rushing snaps from the edge position. All of this, according to NFL Pro. The other three Packers pass rushers do qualify for that stat. They've been rotating pretty heavily, which is another reason why you're like, why is Gary getting slower off the ball if he's still coming – if he's still supposed to be fresh, right?
Yeah.
Among those 61 edge rushers, percentage-wise, in terms of their pressure rate, Preston ranks 47th, Lucas Van Ness ranks 58th, and Kingsley Ndebore is 60th.
So out of 61?
Out of 61, yeah, that's pretty bad.
That's not great.
Yeah, so, like, Ndebore, I'm not sure what's going on with him. If we want to get down to the individual level, right? Not sure what's going on with him. Lucas Van Ness, I feel like he's a cleanup guy right now. Still doesn't know pass rush moves. Did get an increase in snap counts and all that stuff this past week. He played more than Preston Smith did. That's not normal. There were games this year where he was, you know, fourth in the pecking order. Yep. He was second in this one. I do think the way that the coaching staff has talked about it, and his youth and all that stuff, they don't think that practice reps are really going to get him there. It seems like game reps are where he's going to have to, you know, learn how to be an NFL starter if he's ever going to develop into that. And if you think that he needs to play to develop, I understand it. Like that one's not an issue for me. Preston, not been on the field as much as I thought he would, honestly, this year, which I'm kind of fine with. Like, I think he's more of a run defender than a pass rusher anyway. And then Gary has just been disappointed. Like, Gary should be better than this. This is not what we paid for. I don't know how else we can describe that. I don't think it's for a lack of effort or anything. It's just like, all right, we're going to have to like move him around and figure out how to get him on one-on-ones. Cause if they're chipping edges, like you're already playing certain downs where you have four defensive ends or three guys in Colby Wooden, who's functionally a defensive end, right?
Yep.
In terms of size on the field at the same time, like, I don't know. Would it kill you to line him up on a center and just have him bull rush the center and do some of the like Za'Darius Smith stuff? Like, there's ways you can get him on one-on-ones where he's not going to be hit with chip help, right?
Yep. So. But here's my question. Does he even want to bull rush? Because it certainly doesn't seem like he wants to bull rush all that often. He seems to want to go around the edge more. Seems like he wants to try to rip. It seems like he wants to do anything besides actually convert speed to power and try to go through people. And I'm with you. I think they should try to do some different things. Do this, various things. Try anything at this point. Like, you've got to find a way to unlock that potential. And I do 1,000,000% agree with you as well. I don't think it is an effort thing. I think he seems to be working really hard out there and trying to get to the quarterback clearly, but he's not doing it. And I just don't know that he is playing to his skill set. And I know, you know, Ben Fennell's talked about this with LVN as well and tweeted it out today again, like of where LVN is trying to maybe go around and bend the edge a little bit and he just can't do it. That's not how he's made. It just feels like this has to be a group that collectively collapses the pocket a bit more and makes it surround the quarterback than whatever it is that they're kind of doing right now. And I don't know what they're obviously asking them to do. You know, the twists and stunts have worked a little bit, but I don't know. Right now, it just is a really disappointing four-man rush from the edge rushers, the interior rushers, the, you know, when they're going, like you said, the four defensive ends in there all at once. The only thing I'm kind of liking right now is when they're bringing, you know, Edrian Cooper or Quay Walker and causing the disruption and having a little bit more speed in there. That seems to be kind of the only thing that's kind of working right now. Hey everyone, I cannot believe that we are already on to week 6 in the NFL. Thankfully, week 5 went Green Bay's way, but unfortunately, the division stayed strong and Minnesota and Chicago both picked up wins while Detroit had their bye. So needless to say, Green Bay needs to keep winning, but guess what? We all need to keep winning with Prize Picks. Now, Prize Picks is the best place to get real money sports action, and you can join over 10 million users who are already signed up. And when you sign up, you get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the bonus. It's guaranteed. So make your picks in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. This week, I'm going with Josh Jacobs to tear it up against Arizona, and I'm also going to go with Lamar Jackson to have a monster performance against Washington. Whoever you choose, just remember, you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. Prize Picks, run your game.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, right? Because, I mean, this is the thing that they talked about around draft time, where they were like, you can't get small on the defensive line because you get small in a hurry.
Fast,
yeah. Well, if you want guys who are going to be able to bend around an edge, you have to get small. Like, Gary's not an edge bender. LVN is not an edge bender. Those guys are both pocket pushers. So this scheme does kind of demand, like, you to half gap stuff, right? Or one gap stuff, basically. Yep. There's ways to, I mean, you can keep your outside shoulder free and long arm bull rush a guy, right? Like, there's ways to do that. And
LVN was actually using a long arm a little bit towards the end of last year with some success too. I don't think I've seen it so far this year. Like, that should be his go-to move, in my opinion. Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know. Maybe I haven't seen it, but I don't recall seeing it, honestly.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe it's a technique thing. Maybe you need to like de-emphasize certain things and just say like, hey, people love to talk about contain, but at the end of the day, like, we're either telling pass rushers to get home or not, right? And they're either good enough to get home and take some of those risks, and we live with the, you know, we live with the consequences of whatever happens or not, right?
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, unless you're gonna bring five every play and, you know, use one of those linebackers, the other alternative is you're dropping a pass rusher into coverage, right? To bring one of those linebackers.
Back. We're still
and
you back.
Have a four-man rush. Yeah, it's exactly like, okay, like what route do we want to go down? It has to be one of those two. I will say my eyes are on Jason Rebrovich at this point. He's been here for 3 years. He was one of the holdovers from the staff, was outside linebackers coach after Mike Smith left, ended up becoming what they called a pass rush specialist, which is a new thing that the NFL is doing, where it's almost like the run game coordinator, pass game coordinator title that right. like position coaches are getting. So he gets to be called pass game specialist. And then this past year, he got moved to the full-time defensive line coach, which is, you know, includes the defensive tackles and defensive ends. So he's kind of been like working his way up the ladder, but I don't know if the pass rushers have gotten any better, and that's a problem. And you know, at some point you got to turn these guys into something, or you are going to be the one who's going to get replaced.
Right? See, it's the only way to evaluate it, right? Like, we don't have all 22 of what's going on in practice or what they're saying to the players in the film room or anything like that. So like, for me, I'm like, all right, in each of these rooms, who is meeting expectations, below expectations, or above expectations? And you look at that defensive line as a whole, I don't think anyone's above expectations. And maybe Devontae Wyatt was coming a little bit closer, maybe, to meeting expectations. And that's probably it. I think pretty much everyone else is probably
below. But even then, his numbers have dropped. Like,
no, I agree. Yeah, no, I agree. Like, I would say at best, like, maybe you could make an argument. And even that is a weak argument. So, yeah, I think you could pretty much make an argument everyone along the defensive line is underachieving so far.
And the two things we were promised, right? We were promised more turnovers. That has happened.
Check.
And we were promised penetration on the defensive line. And that has not happened. So,
no.
Yeah, I mean, Packers fans, you're justified in wanting more from this. Like, everything was built up to be more than this. You are not being blindsided by any means. The Packers cash spending this year are spending the second most on defense of any other team in the league. It was supposed to be more than this. It certainly was. And they have to get better. I mean, it doesn't matter how they get better, right? Whether it's, you know, linebackers being loopers on some of these like weird stunts and twists, if it's, you know, hey, we're going to rush four, but like LVN and, you know, Rashawn are going to be guys who are going to be going through and, you know, being pocket pushers more than like edge benders. It could be the team looking around and saying like, okay, maybe we do want to play with an edge bender, but we don't have one on the roster if it's not Enagbare, right? Yep. So we got to go trade for one. Like, it doesn't matter. It just has to get better. That's what it is.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe we'll see what this next month brings. I don't see Goody having a huge appetite for going out and getting a pass rusher at the deadline with all the money and resources that they've put into this group already. Again, maybe I could be wrong. They definitely have some money to go out and spend. I can't imagine they're going to want to get into the Hassan Reddick situation where he clearly wants a new contract. I don't know, yeah. But you know, crazier things have happened, but that's not generally.
Well, I mean, maybe it's one of those cut down things, right? With like, yeah. Who was it? Whitney Mercilus. They had Whitney Mercilus a couple years ago, around the deadline. Like, I don't know, maybe Reddick. The other thing too is you only have to pay half a season for these guys. So if you know Reddick is in and out and he's going to sign a new contract, okay, like maybe you go grab him, get the comp pick, pay him whatever for this year, and then he's just gone. Like, I don't think you necessarily.
I think that's what the Jets want. I think that's the whole thing. Yeah. Like, that's what the Jets want. It's just like, we want you to play this year. You go get your contract in the offseason. We'll get the comp pick and we'll live with it. And he wants the new contract now. So I think that's why like it becomes very complicated.
Yeah, but at some point he's going to need the year to count, right? Yep. To accrue, or he's just going to be in the same exact position next year, because that's how the NFL rules are. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, there's definitely still a lot of season before the trade deadline. Would be nice if they could fix it in house, but I mean, certainly something has to happen. That being said, I don't think it's happening this week. Kyler Murray runs like a 4-3, this is probably not the week to be like, hey, let's play around with our pass rush plan and figure out what we're doing. Like, keep Kyler in the pocket.
Yeah, it's going to be contained fast again, and probably rightfully so.
Put it on the defensive tackles. Like, rush upfield on the guy who's, you know, 5'9" and hold an edge. Like,
and they just lost Will Hernandez for the season, arguably they're one of their best offensive linemen. So that will definitely hurt Arizona, and we'll see if Green Bay can actually take advantage of it. We'll talk about that game more in just a moment. What did you think about Jordan in this one? Obviously really bad pick six, few inaccuracies here and there. Any concern? Much ado about nothing. Where are you at with Jordan?
No, I mean, good reminder that he's a young guy. Probably his worst game this season, I would say. Yep. Some of the I mean, I didn't love the play call on the pick six. I don't love sprint outs
ever,
especially when, yeah. The only way I like sprint
outs, the Hail Mary sprint outs, about the only thing that, like, how they, yes, that's about the only thing I like.
There's like weird play action sprint outs that are like not boot, where you can get all five guys out in routes. I like that. But on those sprint, I mean, what, three guys must have been running routes on that play. You run out of time because you hit the sideline. It's the same with like tosses into the boundary for me. I just don't like that play call. I will never like that play call. He'll never convince me it's a good play call. And it's because of plays like that where quarterback runs out of time. He doesn't know what to do. There's not enough guys running routes. And, you know, it looked like he didn't know the pressure was coming, saw it last second, and then was trying to throw it away to save his safety. And he ended up getting a pick six. So, yeah, I'm not counting that too highly against, you know, what I think that he's going to do moving forward. The throw to Jaden Reed, oh, my God. Not a great decision, but what a catch. There are certainly, you know, some other plays that he ended up missing in that game. I thought the spacing didn't look as bad as it was, you know, in previous weeks.
Agreed.
For some of these plays. So, like, the wide receivers actually knew what the heck they were doing. Dowdle was interesting. Musgrave didn't play a single snap on offense. Outside of that, I don't have much in the passing game.
Yeah, I don't know why or what the point of activating him is if you're not going to play him a single snap, especially when Beck is out there too. I mean, I guess what, Brenton Cox or Travis Glover would have been your other ones, and they probably wouldn't have had a real role anyway. So I guess maybe it would have been like, if Kraft goes out, maybe they bring in Musgrave in some more, you know, passing situations or whatever. But that was a little bit interesting in this one. Not super shocked. I didn't think he was going to get activated in this one. I expected him to be inactive. But maybe it was just more of an emergency in case Tucker Kraft went out with some of the stuff that they had in the game plan for the tight end position. But that was definitely interesting. Going to wide receiver for a moment, you talked about Jaden Reed and the catch that he made. I saw you post about slot production in the NFL through Sunday. He is number one on that list. He is, I don't even know how I want to define Jaden Reed at this point. He is playing unbelievable, out of his mind, winning at every single level after the catch. He's blocking, like, he is a complete wide receiver in a very tiny package. And like, it's just, it's really, really fun to watch right now.
Yeah. I mean, he has the hands to return punts, right? He can do all the gadget receiver stuff.
Yep.
He can win on deep routes as a ball winner, even though he's not a, you know, 6'4" guy or anything like that. He can separate over the middle of the field. Like, and he's tough too. Like, what, you know, it's going to take maybe one or two defensive backs to bring him down. You're not just going to be able to get a hand on this guy and he's going to hop out of bounds or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, he's, I don't know if he's going to have like an all pro season. I know his stats will probably make that case for him just in terms of like the, you know, total offense yards and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, he's definitely the best slot receiver in the NFL right now, which is great. I'll take that. Like, feed that dude. I mean, this game was kind of interesting too, because they were basically in 11 the entire time. They didn't use, you know, the two tight end sets. Malik Heath ended up playing three quarters of the game, which I don't think anyone expected that for him. I mean, he was a guy who was on the roster bubble, you know, in August, right? So, yeah, just interesting how they kind of got out of this game, and hopefully we'll have Romeo back next week.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the Romeo Doubs situation. It was interesting that On Sunday, Matt didn't seem to have a great feel of whether or not he was even going to be able to for sure have that conversation with Romy. He was hopeful that they were going to. Sounds like they had that conversation on Monday. Per multiple reports, Romeo will be at practice on Wednesday. Matt made basically almost no talking points on it whatsoever on the press conference on Monday, basically just saying they're going to keep it all in house and everyone's ready to move forward. Where is your level of confidence of, is this just going to be Romeo goes back in the role that he was? Is he going to have to earn his way back? Is there like, and it's an impossible question to ask because obviously we're not in the building, but yeah, how could you see this going?
You know, the way that they talked about it was more like, yeah, that was, they seem as shocked as Packers fans were that it was Romeo.
Yes.
Right. Because of everything that he's done for this team. Right. And he's been, you know, I don't have to tell you guys, I'm sure you guys saw all the quotes from, you know, August where they're talking about how, you know, you don't have to think about the ball. Like it's all going to be split evenly. Like the ball's just going to be out there. That's how they want to run this wide receiver room. And you just got to do your job and help the team win and all that stuff. Right. And that's kind of who Romeo's been this entire time. So I kind of think they look at this and it's like an open shut door. Right. It's like, all right, you got your suspension. Let's get back on track. Let's not make this a bigger deal than it needs to be. Let's not hold grudges moving forward and all that stuff. Especially with Christian probably still being out this week, right? Who knows, maybe? Like, I know he was doubtful, and LaFleur said that he's hopeful that, you know, they got better news than what they expected and all that stuff. But I still would be pretty surprised if Christian played against Arizona. They're probably going to need him. I mean, I'm sure they didn't love having to play Malik Heath three quarters of the snaps, right? Against the Rams. So I think they just want to get it done with. It does seem interesting because you mentioned, you know, Sunday was kind of illuminating in terms of what LaFleur said. Because everything that we read, right, from the initial reporting from Bill Huber from Sports Illustrated was, you know, someone had to go to his premises basically on Wednesday during or Thursday during practice to find, you know, Romeo because he had, you know, no call, no showed. Basically, right? What we don't know is what happened on Friday, right? Sure. And that's something that we haven't really pieced together yet because after Thursday, LaFleur was like, yeah, we're hopeful, you know, Romeo will come back on Friday. And then after Friday's practice and his presser, he was like, yeah, we're just kind of like taking it day by day right now. And we never really got the answer of whether they had connected at that point or they were still in communication. To me, it
doesn't seem like they did. It seems like he still skipped out on Friday's practice would be my reading between the lines of it. But you're right. We haven't had the 100% confirmation of that.
Right.
At least that I've seen.
And then everything on Sunday was like, yeah, we're going to have that conversation on Monday, which, you know, we're recording on a Monday night and everything seems to have gone smoothly since then. So hopefully this is all just behind us.
What's your hypothesis of what the impetus of this was?
So it doesn't make sense looking backward. So it had to be something looking forward. So it had to, in my opinion, the way it's making sense to me, at least, right? He's gotten all these targets. He's played all these snaps. He's run all these routes, right? It's not just blocking stuff. Like he's running real routes and getting the ball.
Yep.
Through the first, you know, month of the season, he played with a backup quarterback for two games. Everyone in the world knew the situation there, right?
Yeah.
It had to have been what the role for him was in a Watson-less offense, in my opinion. That's what it had to have been. And it had to have been the team saying, you know, hey, we're going to feed Tucker Kraft a little bit more. We're going to feed, you know, Jaden's going to get his touches, obviously. Let's get Wick some more in cutters and stuff like that. And maybe Dobbs felt kind of left out in that situation, especially considering, you know, he's looking at that second contract. That second contract is obviously where he's going to make most of his lifetime money and all that stuff. It is worth saying, like, even people who have brought up, like, potential, and it's so weird because you're talking about a potential mental health issue that we don't even know is a mental health issue, exists, right?
Yeah.
It's worth noting, even within the context of that, it's worth pulling a guy like Romeo aside and saying, like, okay, if this is what you're worrying about, though, this isn't helping your situation.
Right? No, not at all.
Losing damn near, what, $80,000 on this game because of the suspension alone for conduct detrimental to the team, not being on the field, not being able to raise those stats that, you know, you may or may not feel entitled to, those type of things. Like, that's not helping your situation. Plus, he missed the homecoming back to LA, which is where he's from, right? All that stuff. So I'm sure, and like,
it doesn't get big contracts is off-field like issues, or people are like, you know, disgruntled right. wide receivers, you know, like that's not a good optic either way.
Right. Exactly. So I'm sure someone got into his ear and, like, I don't want to say like talk some sense into him, but like, I don't know what the other word would be. Not necessarily that that's like how I feel about it, but like, probably the shorthand.
It's the wrong way to go about it, no matter what. Like, even if he's right, right? Like, even if he had a legitimate gripe, which, again, it's hard to piece together that and, like, figure out, like, all right, what's the argument that we're making here? But even if he did, this is, like, there's a very, like, it's impossible to make the argument of, like, yep, this was definitely the right way to go about it. Like, there's no way.
It certainly didn't help. So, like, again, I think... to your previous question, like, I think everyone just wants to move on. Like, who wants to linger in this shit? To pardon my French.
You're good.
But like, how did you play ball growing up?
I don't know. Here's my story. This is, and if nobody's heard this before, this is a fantastic story. I started playing tackle football in middle school. I was probably, I don't know, whatever like a normal human being was, I was probably 30 pounds less than what it should have been, which is probably not going to be shocking to anybody. I had always been, through grade school, through recess, through everything, I'd always been the quarterback. That's not to say it was good, bad, but like, that is what I had always been. So I go to middle school the first day and they're like, I usually play quarterback. So this is the first day you ever put pad, like I had ever put in football pads on in my entire life. So I had assumed that like all the pads were the same and everything was equal. So I get regular shoulder pads, no quarterback pads. So like, I go back to pass on the first play and they just throw the ball into the ground, 'cause like, I have no shoulder movement whatsoever. They didn't give me quarterback pads on the shoulders, and they gave me a helmet that literally dug like 5 inches into my head. And I just had Rydell tattooed onto my forehead for like a month afterwards. And then of course, like, this was like, you know, to the point where every single day was just nutcrackers for like an hour. And it was like, I'm probably maybe the second smallest one out there. And I'm like, this is not what I had foreseen coming. So it didn't last very long. And I decided to play a lot of flag football, Madden, and do this instead. So maybe it's worked out. Maybe it hasn't. I have a feeling I wasn't going to make it to the NFL one way or the other, Justin. So I feel like I maybe made the right decision, but it didn't go very long when I did try playing.
So I played center growing up, right? Okay. And we played the Tony Franklin system, which people may or may not be aware of.
Sure.
It's like what Jared Goff ran at Cal, where the center is basically running the offense. The center is actually doing the snap count, which is interesting. But the center is like doing all the offensive line checks. And then the quarterback is basically doing everything with the receivers. So like, I don't know if people saw that clip of the Bear center and Caleb Williams interacting this past week, where Caleb Williams makes the check and the center's MFing him behind him and stuff like that. That was kind of what I was doing in high school. And then I've coached football before. I don't want you to think this is in the context of me talking to kids. It's only been with other adults, but like,
right.
I've blown up on people playing football, especially in a game day environment and all that stuff. Like,
yes.
People I would die for, people I would burn in hell for. I have MF'd them and just like completely exploded. And then, you know, after someone calms you down maybe a little bit, or, you know, an hour later because you're doing something else on the different side of the practice field, you come back and you're like, I'm sorry. And they're like, yeah, I know. You were hot. Like, it is the sport does attract people who are, I don't want to say a couple of bruise. Yeah, it attracts certain people, right? And I just kind of think like, yeah, man, maybe he had a really bad day and like he blew up, and that stuff happens, man. How often, like, we saw Bo Nix screaming his brain out, you know, a rookie quarterback at Sean Payton, who has a Super Bowl ring to his name, right? On the sideline this past week. Like, people are going to blow up when they care, right?
Yeah.
And it's okay as long as people understand afterwards they can come back together and like no hard feelings, no lines were crossed, like stuff isn't going to happen again. Let's try to communicate better next time. Like it's not that unhealthy in the context of this sport to have a blow up, I guess is what I'm trying to make, the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, I think how he responds, and this is usually the case in anything, right? It's not always the crime, it's how you respond to it afterwards, or not always the transgression, it's how you respond to it afterwards. And I think if Romeo comes back and is remorseful for the decision that he made and says, you know, my bad, guys, and hopefully the younger guys can learn from Romeo's mistake, because it's always better to learn from somebody else's mistake rather than your own.
Yeah,
like if that can all happen, I think there's a very positive way that this can go and they can kind of move forward. I'm just going to be extra interested to see how this goes this week. And hopefully it is much ado about nothing. And Romeo gets back inserted, has a big week this week. They need him to be, he's going to be still a key piece in this offense, in my opinion. So I'm looking forward to it just being behind us. And hopefully again, everything goes exactly as you would expect it to moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to have to talk about it on Wednesday, assuming that he shows up, which, you know, by all accounts, we're assuming that he's showing up. Based off of how LaFleur's talked about it and stuff. And hopefully that'll just be the end of that.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It'll definitely be worth monitoring a little bit this week, though. All right, a couple other things before we get out of here. One, Big Nickel / Eric Stokes and Keyshawn Nixon playing a lot on the outside. Carrington Valentine played a little bit more, but we got our first real taste of Javon Bullard in the slot. We got a huge taste of Evan Williams basically being the starting safety alongside Xavier McKinney in this one. Your thoughts on the secondary?
I thought it was a little shakier than the alternative, but it was their first game really doing it. So pretty good for a first game, you know, Bullard playing in the slot. Evan Williams is safe. He had that big moment at the end of the game where they forced that pass breakup, that ices the game. Right. So
yep,
that's nice. I don't want Keyshawn outside. I don't think.
Nope.
I watched it. I don't think that's your best option. So I guess you kind of have to make the decision basically of like, do we want Keyshawn on the field or do we want Evan Williams on the field is really what the debate should be about. They rotated out outside corner. I have sold every ounce of stock that I have of Eric Stokes at this point. It's not looking good. I'd like to see Carrington out there. I mean, when the team is fully healthy, I think you want Jair and you want Carrington at corner.
Outside. Yep.
I think Bullard's a better safety than Evan Williams, but if you want Evan Williams there so Bullard can play in the slot, I'm not going to argue about that. Or if you want Keyshawn in the slot, I'm also not going to argue about that. So I think you know who your best six DBs are. Use whatever combination of those five to get either, you know, Keyshawn or Evan Williams on the field. And I'm cool with it. I'm just post Stokes at this point. I just don't, it's not doing it for me. Their teams are creating too much separation at the top of routes. And when you're getting even some of these chips, right? So this is kind of how coverage and pass rush plans tie in together, right? If you can't get after the quarterback because Rashawn Gary is getting chipped, there's a wide receiver running a dig route. And Stokes is losing at the top of these routes. It doesn't matter how many guys you have in coverage, right?
Right.
So I think you got to have a guy who's a little bit more fluid out there. I do think that Keyshawn showed that he was a little bit more fluid in his hips and stuff like that and keeping with guys on top of routes than Stokes was. But I think ultimately the decision that you have to make is, do you want Carrington to be a starter or not? And that's something that the team's going to have to answer.
Give me Xavier McKinney as your primary safety, Jair and Valentine on the outside, and then just take the remaining two spots and split it equally between Bullard, Nixon, and Williams and get all of those guys on the field about, you know, 2/3 of the time for each of them or whatever that equates to. But yeah, I think that to me, you know, put Nixon in the slot half the time, three quarters of the time, Bullard in the slot a quarter of the time, put Bullard at safety half of the time, put Williams at safety half of the time. And then, you know, you basically end up with Williams playing a quarter, I'm doing Scott Steiner math over here. You end up with a Williams playing half the game, and then Javon Bullard and Keyshawn Nixon both playing three quarters of the game. And to me, that's a solid rotation for everyone. I think you can get a smattering of Bullard in the slot and some big nickel situations. I think there's a place for that depending on who you're going against in the formations and things like that. But I still kind of want to see Keyshawn there primarily. And then again, yeah, get Williams on the field a little bit as you can. And that to me seems like a reasonable expectation for this defensive back group going forward.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about it. Again, I understand people have preconceived notions that they came into the season with Keyshawn. They didn't want him to be their slot. They wanted to draft someone in the first round, right? A lot of people wanted Cooper DeJean drafted in the first round, totally, frankly. And that didn't happen. So now they're anti-Keyshawn, which I think is pretty dumb. He's having an okay year. Like, I don't think he's great in the slot right now, but there's not a lot of great slot players, to be totally frank. Nope. A lot of these guys are not playing on the inside. Like, he's playing a whole lot better than some of the stuff that we see on the field right now.
Slot, I feel like, needs to be graded on a curve. That's like the one thing I've really learned over the last couple of years is you almost have to grade slot on a curve because it is just such an impossible position. But sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, one guy that people brought up in the draft was what's his name? Sainstro?
Sain Ristol or whatever. Yeah, for Washington.
He's getting bombed right now. He's not having a great time this second. So like a lot of the alternatives are not playing better than Keyshawn. So probably pump the brakes on the Keyshawn negativity, I would say. But that's kind of all I got on that one.
Trying to see if I can get a easy.
What's I got the, you. I got you a stat.
First slot. All right, go ahead.
Saint Strill has. Oh, I looked at corner instead of slots. He has played 53 snaps in the slot and has given up 96 yards or 69 yards and three touchdowns, according to NFL Pro. Keyshawn has played twice as many plays, has given up 85 yards and a touchdown. So, I mean, they basically have given up the same. Sainstro has given up two more touchdowns, and Keyshawn has played twice as many snaps for perspective. So
here's another one to look at. There have been 19 slot corners that have played 50% of the coverage snaps so far this season. And this is the NFL passer rating that they've allowed so far in the year. There are 19 of them. Keyshawn Nixon is ranked 7th of that group. He has been targeted 17 times, given up 9 completions, 96 yards, 1 touchdown, no picks, 0.82 yards per snap, 6.9 snaps per target, 13.0 snaps per reception. Obviously QB rating is not a perfect indicator by any stretch of the imagination, but I mean, he is 7th, and Lenore for San Francisco is right above him at 89.2. Avante Maddox, Jaquan McMillan for Denver, Jordan Lewis for Dallas, Mike Hilton and Amik Robertson are the players that are ahead of him. Alante Taylor is just a little bit behind him. So Beanie Bishop for Pittsburgh, worst at 125.6. Not a great number.
Yeah, so like, again, any metric you look at, he's basically a slightly above average starter.
Yeah,
and that's it's fine. Yeah, yep. So...
And I've said too, like, if he's your, and I'm not even saying he necessarily is this, but like, if Keyshawn Nixon is your 10th or 11th best defender on the field, you're in a very, very good spot. Like, nobody's going to have a perfect 11 starters. If you're 11th or 10th or whatever it is Nixon, no problem with that whatsoever.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm not too worried about him. I'm definitely more worried about Stokes.
Agreed.
I think they just wanted to make it work and it's just not working. And at some point, you got to call it. So,
and it seemed like they were trending more towards Valentine before Valentine got hurt. I don't think they wanted to give him a full complement of snaps coming back, and they were without Jair anyway. So Stokes probably needed to be that other guy. I'll be interested to see with Jair coming back what it looks like in that situation. My guess is it's probably still closer to 50-50 between Stokes and Valentine, but I think that's going to transition to more Valentine and less Stokes as time goes on.
Yeah. I mean, again, like even if they go 50-50 and it's like, oh, we're going to decide it on the field. Well, what's the field going to decide? I think the field's going to decide that it's going to be Valentine instead of Stokes at this point. So, I mean, maybe you want him for like Marvin Harrison Jr. being like the outside wide receiver, longer body type of guy, like maybe you're less worried about him killing you on in cuts and stuff like that, or being in tight formations. But I think like Stokes at this point is like a situational corner. Like you yep. want a matchup guy. And he's great in that situation, right? Especially off of the bench. Like there's certainly NFL teams that would be begging for a guy like that off of the bench, but agreed. I don't think you can play him every down.
No, I think he's an NFL corner. I think he probably is more, like you said, a depth piece or in a situational scenario based on who he's playing against. If it's a linear vertical corner with good or a wide receiver with good speed, maybe a Darius Slayton, a DJ Chark, a DK Metcalf, any of those, I think, again, maybe a Marvin Harrison, where it's again more vertical routes. MVS would be an example. Like any of those, I feel comfortable with. Anyone that has that ability to snap off a route, do a quick inbreaker, any sort of agility, you know, in cut ability, route running ability, I'm good. It needs to be somebody else at that point. All right. Last but not least, Packers Cardinals. A couple quick things you're looking for in this one.
Stop Kyler. I honestly haven't seen the Cardinals this much this year, but whenever I do see it, it's just Kyler running around doing all sorts of crazy stuff. So yeah, I mean, keep him in the pocket. I think it's going to be big this week to set the edge. I know we just talked about, you know, letting the pass rushers loose and all that stuff. This isn't the week to do that. At least on the edges, on the interior, I mean, it's going to be a pretty big deal for those guys to win one-on-one. We'll see what happens with Devontae Wyatt and his injury situation. I thought it was nice that Carl Brooks saw a pretty significant uptick in snaps. Colby Wooden actually out-snapped TJ Slayton too. So Slayton is kind of fourth in the pecking order. I wonder if they just view Slayton as a guy who he can only play X amount of snaps per game. Yeah. Right. And it's like, he's always going to be that three or four defensive tackle, you know, depending on how you look at it. And, you know, whoever it is behind him is going to end up taking more of those snaps if someone in front of him goes down. So I expect a lot more from this pass rush. Hopefully we get it on the interior this week, because that's where we're going to need it.
What do you think they do with Jonathan Ford once he's ready to return? That seems like a weird situation. I don't know what they do with him there.
I don't know. I mean, unless you're planning on trading TJ Slayton, like how else are you going to get him on the team? Like you already were healthy scratching Wooden. For these games. So I don't like them carrying six defensive tackles doesn't really make sense to me. I don't see how they can make that work with
unless they run a sixth defensive end and they get rid of Brenton Cox that they're not using anyway or something like that. If they view Ford better, but yeah, I don't know. It seems weird. Maybe it's just like insurance just in case, get another defensive tackle injury over the next couple of weeks. And if they don't, they'll just release him and try to get him back on the practice squad. But I don't know. Whole thing seems a little bit weird.
Yeah, I know they've kind of like struck out on some of the UDFAs that they brought in. Like they don't seem like they want to keep them, right?
No.
So I think, breaking case of emergency, he comes on to the active roster. If a couple guys go down at defensive tackle, and then whenever guys are healthy, I think they ideally push him back to the practice squad for sure.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. All right, we will save our conversation for pitches for another day, although we do need to get to that sooner rather than later. Justice, fantastic stuff as always. Where can we find all of your work on social media? And of course, where you are doing all your writing and fantastic stuff.
Yeah, I'm writing for acmepackingcompany.com. You can find me on Twitter at JUMOSQ. If you want to listen to me, I mean, it's going to be here at Pack a Day for the foreseeable future. So that's all I got to plug.
Well, we're very lucky to have you. We appreciate you coming on every single week. It is a joy every single time. Enjoy your week. We will talk to you following Packers Cardinals, hopefully talking about a victory and a dominant pass rush next week. Let's speak it into existence. Follow him on Twitter at JUMOSQ. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Packaday Podcast. For Justice and I, we will see you soon. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.